cliffcentral.com.
That's Fools. Good morning, everybody. Are you happy? Are you having a good Thursday? Is it going, like, really, really well? Okay, awesome. Because the weekend is only, like, one day away, you know. It's fantastic. Listen to how excited Mubs is.
Woohoo!
All right, we're going to speak to Justice Malala. He is live in Port Elizabeth this morning and ready to give us the burning platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Mr. Malala, is today a lemon and herb kind of day, a mild, a hot, or a very hot?
It's very hot. It's so hot.
Oh, really?
I mean, he's a hot. Absolutely. I mean, Jacob Zuma. It's hot.
We were just talking about this whole Malusi Gigaba thing, and obviously, you know, it's not within your purview to get into gossip and nonsense, but you are a newsman and you are a journalist and you have written books that are very successful. I mean, these kinds of things are exciting and titillating to the public, but they also do have a real-world effect on the credibility of people like Malusi Gigaba, don't they?
They do, and certainly they raise questions about the character, about the personality, about the temperament of the person in office. If you're Malusi Gigaba in particular, big questions have been asked about the minister's association, shall we say, with the Gupta family. Big questions have been asked that about the fact that President Zuma clearly wanted Brian Molefe to be finance minister. Before that, he tried to get in Des Van Rooyen and so forth. And the question has always been, why did he want those people in? And the evidence to all of us goes back to the Gupta family and their alleged need to get their hands on national treasury. So what makes Malusi Gigaba so acceptable to President Jacob Zuma? Is it because he wants inclusive growth? No. The allegation has always been, the questions have always been around his association with the Gupta family, his closeness to that family, and what he'll do once in office for them, as Museveni Zizwane is alleged to have done with getting them Tegeta mine from Optimum Coal from Glencore and so forth and so forth. So take away all the stuff that's been said and the allegations and the PowerPoint slides and so forth. The key here is that account from the minister's former associate talks about a flight to from Joburg to Durban. It also threatens the minister about further allegations around a date, December 18. We don't know of which year. Essentially saying, I'll spill the beans. Now, that goes to the heart of governance. That goes to the heart of the key questions we're asking about state capture, yeah. About what exactly does the Gupta family have on the president, on those around him, on particularly ministers Des Van Rooyen, Minister Museveni Zizwane, and the finance minister that President Jacob Zuma has wanted to install for so long in office. So that, you know, it's all titillation and so forth, and people get excited. But there's a real question here about why the minister is where he is and who exactly profits from him. So this adds another layer of questions for Minister Gigaba. The second thing is that, you know, for the past month, you can talk about the new Home Affairs Minister, Hlengiwe Buhlemkhize. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we know that that wasn't the big prize. That's not a controversial appointment at all. The new minister there is a PhD, competent and so forth. That's why not many people are writing about why she's there, what she's doing there, and so forth and so forth. The key to that cabinet reshuffle, the reason why you have all these organizations, Helen Suzman Foundation and so forth, challenging the appointment of or the reshuffle, is because of the finance ministry and what it can do. The fact that we've been downgraded twice after that cabinet reshuffle by Fitch and S&P. Those questions go to the heart of the Zuma administration. And so when you get a little morsel from someone across the Atlantic saying this could be happening, this could have happened, you begin to connect the dots. And so for Minister Malusi Gigaba, there are real questions to be answered here. And it's not about whether, you know, you did it, what happened. I'm not interested. No one really wants to know. Well, some people might want to know. But the key question are the questions raised about his integrity, his closeness, his proximity to the Gupta family. And we know what they are capable of. So,
and surely so also surely also his vulnerability, his susceptibility to harm, and the ability for people who don't like him to get to him. Clearly, if some woman who was a side chick is able to tear his reputation to pieces with Twitter, it puts his reproach somewhere a little bit less than at a point where you would feel he's secure.
You might want to revisit, and someone has put some of the stuff on Twitter. Way back, I think it was last year, Julius Malema spoke at length about Malusi Gigaba, and he made serious allegations, allegations that Gigaba should have responded to. And he said, well, first of all, he's in the pay of the Gupta family. Then he said the same woman who's made these allegations now said Minister Gigaba gave her, I think it was $20,000 in cash. And he asked the question, where does a minister get $20,000 in cash? And that's a very good question. That's a fair question to ask.
Right.
That if you're paying someone 2.4 million rand per annum, you know, it's pretty hard for them to pitch up and give someone $20,000 in cash. Why wasn't it a transfer? And so forth and so forth. So imagine if some nefarious person went to the minister and said, look, I know what went down with so-and-so, and if you don't give me money, I will go out and tell the world that you did 1, 2, 3. You immediately have a minister who is beholden
right.
to that person who made start telling that person, look, this is what you want to do. This is what we intend to do. Start spilling state secrets and opening South Africa up to massive harm, to serious harm, if that minister is scared that something will happen. So we have a problem here, and it's a serious one. It's a security problem that a minister who has so much going on, who has so much to hide, may be susceptible to some foreign force or some domestic force, some player turning up and saying, look, I'm going to tell the world, I'm going to tell the newspapers, I'm going to tell this or that person that you did 1, 2, 3. What will the minister do? The likelihood is that the minister will now have a second boss to keep those secrets out of the public domain. And that is a big issue. And so, you know, if you draw a line from your question, Gareth, what should President Jacob Zuma doing? What is he doing about his appointment just over a month ago, of Malusi Gigaba? Should he be thinking, is it time for another midnight announcement? Is it time to call a few people and say, maybe the minister needs to go sort out his issues before he can come back and do some other job. But it's a serious issue. It's not a, it poses real risk to South Africa. It poses real risk to the minister. And he has to do something about it. He can't fob it aside. But, you know, Minister Gigaba has many problems on his plate. It's not just the issue of the lady who is saying all these things about him. He's got real issues with this economy, an economy that is not growing, an economy that has no jobs, an economy that he hasn't told us how he's going to turn it around. We hear about radical economic transformation. The other day he said radical economic transformation is the same as inclusive growth. Well, if it's the same, why was Pravin Gordhan fired? Was it because he wanted something other than what President Jacob Zuma wants, which is radical economic transformation, and so forth and so forth? That's a big problem. The second problem is that Lungisa Fuzile, who is his director general, gave his last visit to Parliament on Tuesday. And yeah. So that's the end of that. That man, if you followed his career, is absolutely brilliant. And he's leaving after Pravin Gordhan and Tebisi Jonas went. His deputy, Andrew Donaldson, is leaving. There's a big question about the departure of both men, because when the Guptas allegedly offered Tebisi Jonas a job in exchange for 600 million rand way back in 2015, they also said, here's a list of people you have to get rid of. Number one on that list was Lungisa Fuzile. Number two was Andrew Donaldson. Number three, oh, wow. I think, was Momoniat, the other deputy DG. And there was a fourth name. So you can imagine, in just a month, and a week that Malusi Gigaba has been in office, number one on that list is gone. Number two is going. And what happens next? I suspect number three and number four will go as well. So Malusi Gigaba has many problems. He's got an economy that's going to hell in a handbasket. And these allegations are a major distraction for him and for the country.
And do we even think he knows what to do in this job? I mean, does he have any plans? Or is he the stooge? Is he the stooge that we think he is, that the president just put in to make the state capture a reality?
Well, right now he's furiously trying to stave off a third downgrade. Remember that, as I said, S&P and Fitch have downgraded us. Now, if he wants to avoid a downgrade from Moody's, he can't go out and say, I want to change things. So he's going out and saying, things will be exactly the same. Well, if things are going to be exactly the same, we have unemployment at 27%. We have GDP growth at 0.4%. The same means that we are staying in the same bad shape that we are in. How is that going to help anyone stay in the same? If he's got a plan, he's got to start saying, I want radical economic transformation, and this is what it means. He's not saying that. He went to the World Economic Forum last week, and someone pointed out that he actually said radical economic transformation once in that 1 hour and didn't get back to it. So my view is that he doesn't have a plan. His plan is to sort of placate, say, I will be the same person as Pravin Gordhan. But no one is buying that. No one is even... remotely thinking that this is the same person as Pravin Gordhan. So there's no plan here. It doesn't seem like there's a plan at all. And if there is a plan, he hasn't told us. Look, Malusi Gigaba is a smart guy. He's a quick study, and he can speak the language. He can do the right things, but he will forever have the shadow of Jacob Zuma and the Guptas hanging over him. And so long as that shadow exists, it is virtually impossible for him to turn this economy around. His problem is not just, it's not Malusi Gigaba. His problem is that he's in the same boat. He's in the same ship with Jacob Zuma and the Guptas, and they are dragging him down, and they are dragging South Africa down with them. So the problems will continue. The resignations at National Treasury will continue. And Malusi Gigaba is overseeing, in my view, a sinking ship, and he'll have to find some extra money to placate the masses. Where is he going to find it? Because Batabile Dlamini, other people, other ministers are spending that money very swiftly. You will know that Batabile Dlamini has bought herself a BMW something something smaller nyana one for 1.3 million rand. Now, a car for 1.3 million rand, when Pravin had said, guys, things are bad, let's put a cap on things, let's buy cars of up to 750,000 rand, and you go and buy a car that's almost double that,
right,
you have to say, what fiscal discipline are we talking about? How is Malusi going around saying to the ministers, help me here so that we can save some money? There's clearly no saving going on, and it's let's spend, 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 spend. So he's going to face a big problem. The medium-term budget is coming up in a few months, in October, and it will be interesting to see what he's got to offer. I suspect the same challenges that Pravin faced, others faced before him, will face him, and there is no way out. The water's going to go out, and we'll suddenly realize that some among us are swimming without underpants on, and Malusi Gigaba, in my view, will be one of those who will be exposed.
So, Justice, how poisonous is it becoming to be in that Jacob Zuma camp now? I mean, it could even be affecting Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, who's got very bold ambitions to be president next. She thought that coming in on the president's coattails would probably be a good idea, and maybe the president's advisors thought that for her. She didn't think it herself. But, you know, you have the Premier League in your pocket, you've got KZN, you've got the ANC Youth League, you've got the Women's League. It seems like it should be a slam dunk. But you say it's for people like Malusi Gigaba and possibly Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, it's becoming odious to be associated with the president.
You have President Jacob Zuma in court. You have President Jacob Zuma on the front page of a newspaper, on the headlines of our station, of any medium, there is always talk about President Zuma this, President Zuma that, and it's all people saying, oh my word, what next? Yeah. What about one or other member of his faction, people who support him, and so forth and so forth. At some point, someone has to say, even if we win in December at the ANC elective conference, even if Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma becomes the president of the ANC, something else is going on in society, and that something else is the fact that the ANC is becoming unelectable in 2019. Think about the number of people who are saying 2019, the ANC is not looking good. It started with Jackson Mthembu. Now, Matthew Sporsa, many others are saying, even with a struggle history. So someone like me, I've always said the ANC will walk it in 20, not walk it, but it will win again more than 50% in 2019. But if the scandals continue, even I have to start saying it's time to go back and look at that, at what we are saying, and say, will the ANC go from the 62% where it's at now and actually suffer a catastrophic setback and go to below 50%? And that is no longer becoming something that is remote. Many, many more people are talking about it, and many more people are talking about it inside the ANC. So Jacob Zuma and his camp might win the battle inside the ANC, but will they win the war? And the war is the 2019 election, 2024, and so forth. My assessment now is that Jacob Zuma is becoming, as you say, odious, is becoming toxic to all those around him. They are on the back foot. If you look at the desperation, today the Northern Cape ANC is having its provincial conference. The pro-Zuma crowd there is causing all sorts of havoc in the state, outside of the state, in the ANC. And the big question is, will the ANC win Northern Cape in 2019? And at the rate it's going, it will lose the Northern Cape in 2019. And why? Because there's a Jacob Zuma faction there that is causing real havoc in the state. And so for people like Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, at some point they will also have realized that Jacob Zuma is their biggest problem, and that they may have to pull the plug on him, if they are to succeed at all. So to be presentable, Jacob Zuma is the one big issue that they're going to have to deal with. So I think Jacob Zuma is in trouble. And the trouble is that as increasingly he's relied on his dominance of the National Executive Committee of the ANC, that dominance is becoming more and more fragile. But even more important, he could end up with some among those who support him saying, maybe, Baba, you need to step aside so that you don't stand in our way. Because if you continue to be in place, there will be people who say, no way. And so Jacob Zuma is now facing a revolt from your Cyril Ramaphosa's, maybe your Guedes, maybe your Zweli Mkhize's and others. And then he's facing a second one. And that one comes from his own people. Think about what is going to happen today. President Jacob Zuma yesterday answers and appeals to Judge Vali. And he says, oh, you say there's an intelligence report, he says to the DA. Give me that report. Now, first of all, how do we know that there's an intelligence report? Solima Paina of the SACP held a press conference in which he said, we were called in by the president on the Monday. He told us that an intelligence report indicated 1, 2, 3, 4. So the DA has to call Solima Paila of the SACP and the five others who were summoned to Lituli House on that Monday to come and report. Then the DA is going to have to also subpoena Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, because remember on that Friday, after the reshuffle, he was in Bloemfontein.
Right.
No, he was in the Free State. I don't think it was Mangaung itself, but I mean, we have someone from the Free State in the studio. Please help us with location.
Yeah, Mabs, someone from the Free State? Come on.
There's the opening of a clinic in the Free State.
Okay.
And at the opening of that clinic, Cyril Ramaphosa was asked by ENCA and the SABC, what do you think of the reshuffle? And he said, I have objected about this reshuffle to President Zuma, particularly about the manner in which it was done and the use of some bogus intelligence report. So we know now that Solima Paila heard about it from President Zuma. Cyril Ramaphosa heard about it from Jacob Zuma. Gwede Mantashe heard about it from Jacob Zuma because he issued a statement the Monday after with the words intelligence report in them. Zweli Mkhize, Baleka Mbete. Now, Jacob Zuma is asking the DA to ask those leaders of the ANC, to come to court and say, yes, Jacob Zuma told me about the intelligence report. Who does this hurt? It hurts the ANC more than anyone else. It is disaster for the ANC. So what happens then? What happens then is that people start saying, if this thing continues like this, we are in trouble. So President Zuma is exposing his own side to the danger of losing not just in December, but the danger of losing South Africa, even if they win in December. And so he's becoming increasingly vulnerable, increasingly alone. There are reports coming out of the United States that Donald Trump spends a lot of time on his own in the White House, isolated from people and so forth. I think Jacob Zuma is not quite in the same position because he's got a lot of family surrounding him. But I think in the ANC, he's finding that there's fewer and fewer and fewer people around him. And that's why he's being booed from his own organization's activities and so forth and so forth.
Speaking of booing, I mean, is there anywhere besides KwaZulu-Natal that the president can go now without being booed?
I think he can go to parliament. Maybe a Q&A session is due, and you'll find that he will only find the mild heckling and tactics of the EFF. But other than that, President Jacob Zuma now faces an utter revolt in his ANC and the SACP and COSATU. He can't, if you look at it, President Jacob Zuma essentially pipes up when he gets out of town, and that's when he goes to KwaZulu-Natal. Everywhere else, there is security. There is he's not wanted anymore. People have had enough. Mm-hmm. They've had him speak and say things, and they've known that those things will not be done. But after doing this for 10 years now, they realize that he's an empty bag. He's a windbag. He just makes a lot of noise, but no real stuff comes out of it. So when people in Eldorado Park, when people in Itireleng in Lodium, when people in other parts start saying, we want our houses, it's because they were promised houses and they can see that those houses are not coming. And if President Zuma goes there, they'll be even angrier than they've displayed the past few weeks and just past few days. So really, President Zuma is fast losing his grip on the ANC, his grip on the country, and even in KwaZulu-Natal, I have to say, the reception which greeted someone like Cyril Ramaphosa at Shembe Church, at other places, it shows you that slowly, even in KZN, the support is not as guaranteed as President Zuma thinks it is.
Justice, let's talk about Tegeta for a moment and this situation with the Guptas and their coal mine. And we're in a bit of a fix here because there's no way for us to get out without the Guptas making a huge amount of money.
Yes. But, you know, in so many of the things that concern President Jacob Zuma and concern the Gupta family, we pay anyway. Essentially, we've painted ourselves into a corner. Eskom has painted us into a corner where we have to pay something or other at some point or other. One of the big sadnesses of this whole situation, Gareth, is that we've seen it before. Think about what happened with the social grants in case 2 months ago, when SASSA didn't make the necessary arrangements, when we were faced with making a choice between Net1 and Net1 and Net1. And that's because the minister failed to essentially set up the systems so that we can move seamlessly from that one to a new supplier or to the ministry or the department or SASSA itself making the payments themselves. Now we hear that it will take us 5 years and 6 billion rand to move those payments. Mm-hmm. Why didn't we do it in 2014 when the Constitutional Court said the agreements you have are unconstitutional, are illegal, and go and fix this matter? And we waited until the last minute in March, on March 31, to make the transition. So someone is going to make money. And sometimes, even when people like you and me, we jump up and down and say, hey, it's going to be okay, the courts will rule in this way and that way. The courts merely rule to put us in a situation where you have to give money to the same people that you are trying to protect the country from so that they walk away. Because you believe in contracts, you believe in fairness, mm-hmm. and so your laws are being exploited to make a quick buck for these entities. So this is a very familiar place we find ourselves in. And that familiar place is that you manipulate the system so that either we pay for the coal and we pay through the nose and they still make money, or we walk away from a toxic, no odious contract and we still pay money. But whichever way we look, we pay. Us, the taxpayer, pays for all the problems created by an administration that favors one family and not South Africa and not South African taxpayers, and crucially doesn't favor poor people who are becoming poorer by the day under this administration. So we have a bit of a problem there.
All right, let's move away from state capture for a moment. What is the state of the opposition right now? What are they all up to? Because they've gone remarkably quiet. I don't know how the DA is doing in Tshwane and Johannesburg. They had that victory in August last year. Everybody was all excited. They thought, change will come. Has change come?
Change is slowly happening. I think the state of the opposition is, it's an interesting question, Gareth. One of the things for me, the key thing is that the opposition is doing things together in parliament vis-a-vis President Jacob Zuma a lot more. So on Monday, when the Constitutional Court is going to rule on whether there should be a secret ballot in the motion of no confidence vote on President Jacob Zuma, there'll be a march with the UDM leading it, with the DA, the EFF, others, COPE, and then going to the Constitutional Court. They've done all the marches against President Zuma and so forth and so forth. So there's more of a conversation among opposition ranks than many of us actually realize. They're doing more than they've ever done with each other. But as individual parts, the opposition is, I think, in a bit of pressure. The DA has the Helen Zille tweet saga still hanging all over it, and it doesn't seem to want to go away. They are fighting among themselves. Helen Zille saying her articles defending her tweets issue were given to Musi Maimane saying I only approved one, not the other, and so forth. Mm. So there's a low-level war going on between Musi Maimane and Helen Zille in the DA, and that is unresolved. Now, those two, you remember, were together in fighting for Musi to become the replacement for her in the party. Those two are very close to each other, have been very close to each other, and they were seen as a bit of a faction mm-hmm. In the party. with a different faction, with people like Lindy Wemazibuko and others in the party. So the DA is going through its own, perhaps not massive, but its own turbulence. In the Cape, there have been huge divisions between the so-called Helen Zille faction and others. And you saw it in the bid to replace Patricia de Lille as leader of the party and so forth. Mm-hmm. The other parties, the UDM's problem, and I did a lovely interview and all very nice and well with the UDM, but, you know, it doesn't get voted for. The UDM says some sensible things, Cope says some sensible things, but where are they? They're not playing. So the field is really the EFF, which makes a lot of noise, seems to be growing steadily, makes political capital out of its wins here and there, and the DA, which seems to be going through its own internal problems. In the cities, I have to say that I'm pleasantly surprised by Herman Mashaba's ability to survive this long as mayor of the city of Johannesburg, because his manner, his approach to things, his CEO approach to things, I thought would collapse that council. When he took things in a very sort of straightforward manner, I thought that the EFF would find him too unpalatable even for them and jump out of that coalition. Actually, they haven't. They've stayed with him. And he was giving his State of the City speech the other day. And he seems to be slowly realizing that government is not as fast-moving as the private sector. But he is making some progress. For those of us who live in areas which do have roads, you'll be amazed at the pothole project that's going on. Potholes are being fixed in Johannesburg.
I actually saw that happening on our own road here.
It's happening in the road at the Roundcliffe Central. It's happening in huge numbers. There are potholes being filled in Johannesburg. And it's small things like that that you're beginning to see progress on. And so I'm thinking something is going on here. The ANC in Tshwane is eating itself up. And so Solim Simanga seems to be taking off and is now really beginning to run the municipality. I'm making a bet here, and I've always said, I think Solim Simanga is the guy to watch for the DA, because what is happening with Tshwane is that change is taking place. And I think Solim Simanga, the one guy who's going to be able to use his experience in the city to say, look what I've done. I've done a Helen Zille here. And I can turn the things around in Gauteng. And I think in 2019, he might be the guy that the DA might want to think about seriously as their candidate for Gauteng Premier. And they might have something there. I think that collapse of the ANC in Tshwane and his steady turning of things around, not spectacularly, but I think that he'll be able to use Tshwane as a template for what can be done elsewhere. So the ANC in Gauteng should be very, very worried that the ANC in Tshwane has gone quiet. They have no campaign. They have no strategy to take on him. And he is, the guy's winning. The guy is slowly doing things in Tshwane, and there's no opposition anymore. Whenever the ANC, the last opposition to him was when the ANC said he mustn't give a speech. I can't remember the exact date. It was last month, because that was the day that Solomon Mahlangu was hanged by the apartheid regime. Now, what the ANC in Tshwane did with that campaign was to allege that The DA can't hold that meeting on that day because it was allegedly Tony Leon's dad, who used to be a judge, who sentenced Solomon Mahlangu to death. It turns out that they were wrong on the facts, that it wasn't Ramon Leon who sentenced Solomon Mahlangu. It was a different judge. I think his surname was Du Plessis. So even when they have a gift horse, to use, they fail to use it. And so on Twitter, people were laughing at the ANC saying, oh, you can't even get the judge's name right. You can't even get the basis of your protest right. And so the DA in Tswana sailed on. So, there are some upsides for the DA. But I think at national level, statements like Helen Zille's are hurting the DA and will continue to hurt it, particularly where it needs to grow in black communities, simply because whether Helen Zille has the right to say what she said or not, whether she's right about what she says or not, it's just that if you're a party leader, you also have to think about political gain. And political gain means that sometimes there's an issue where you know you're right, but you just keep quiet because you want the votes of certain people. There is no urgency for Helen Zille to debate whether colonialism had positive aspects or not. There is really nothing to gain for the DA to gain from that debate. And the more she continues with it, she'll find herself painted into a corner that the DA, unfortunately, can't get out of. So right. A mixed bag after August 3, 6 months later, more than 6 months later, for the opposition.
All right, Justice, lots to think about this morning. Thank you for joining us. And what are you doing in PE?
Oh, I'm meeting people. I'm speaking at a conference. I come to PE to get the measure of things, to see how things are going. And it's interesting that even here, Athol Tollip is the mayor, and he's cock-a-hoop, as they say. Mm. He's very upbeat that he's dealing with corruption. And there was a lot of corruption in Nelson Mandela Bay. The ANC here remains divided, fighting against each other. And so the DA, I'm amazed that the DA keeps on challenging Jacob Zuma on so many fronts. Because what Jacob Zuma has done is to give the DA a weapon of mass destruction. They just keep on going because they can use Jacob Zuma to challenge the ANC on almost every point. So it's quite a thing that's going on here. But there's a lot going on in PE. Save South Africa is a big movement here. The opposition here is the opposition is the ANC, but the national opposition, the DA, EFF, are growing. The trade union situation is very interesting because NUMSA is very powerful here, and it's the backbone behind SAFTU. So if COSATU is going to be broken, it's going to be broken here in Nelson Mandela Bay. So all those dynamics play out in the politics of Port Elizabeth, and it's an interesting place indeed to be in.
Thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Another very hot episode, as always, with Justice Malala and the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. And we don't have to tell you, but Nando's always on top of everything. And Justice Malala is just another example of how they're on top of things, getting the best commentary and analysis from South Africa's finest commentator and analyst, Justice Malala. If you missed any of that, you can always catch up the rest of it by going to cliffcentral.com. And finding the podcast, which is easy, by the way. We've got new categories. You can go on. You can look up current affairs. You'll find Justice in there. You can look for business. You can look for entertainment. You can look for any category you like. It's right at the top of the page in our brand new cliffcentral.com website. Or you can download the app and go to The Burning Platform, which is a special feature. You will find it on the app, and you'll be able to download as many of those as you like in a Wi-Fi zone. It will cost you nothing to listen to them. You could listen to 5 episodes of Justice, bumper to bumper, back to back, if you'd like to. If you're on a long road trip or you've got some time today, you don't want to sit at the gym and have to talk to the person on the bike next to you. Instead, listen to some decent podcasts, right? That's what Ben does.
Yep,
pretty much.
That's
what Sia does. Mm-hmm. That's what Mabali does. That's what I do. And once you go to podcasts, you never go back. CliffCentral.com